to you for another week. Next week, we'll be in the middle of Fun Drive. I'm going to try to think up some fun things, some things that get you to send money to the station.
Oh, that'll be good.
I'm going to try to think of something creative to make you all want to jump up and dance to the phone. Tap dance to the phone with pledges for KPFT.
Or even drop by with cash. That works,
drop
too.
By with cash.
Yeah.
On behalf of Scooter, who's given me the yank, the hook, and Glenn, I'm Leo Gold, another edition of the New Capital Show. Good night.
What I do is radio, and it's radio, and it's about saving lives, and it's about one word at a time, and how can we save and make another person's life better.
Hitaji Abdulaziz.
It's about getting people to understand the value of community, the value of human life, the value of the earth, and how we connect with it. You know, it's a life-saving experience when I get in front of the mic.
Earth 101, Tuesdays at 10 a.m.
We're building community right on air. The callers make the show. The callers are the show. The callers, like a member of a family, all come together and they kind of knit this quilt.
Earth 101 membership special.
This fabric of emotions and intellect and concerns and agreements and disagreements, and that's what makes the show what the show is.
Noon on Tuesday, February 8th.
I want it to be a safe space for everybody. I want to set the table for all kinds of different people. That's what makes me excited. I mean, you know, it doesn't make any difference if they're gay or straight, or if they believe, or atheist, agnostic, you know, they have a spirit, whatever.
Earth 101 membership special.
It's a place for you to feel safe and explore the you want to be tomorrow.
Noon on Tuesday, February 8th.
So international, so interconnected, so human, so what we're trying to do here at KPFT.
Earth 101 membership special. Tuesday, February 8th, starting at noon.
Oh, Lord, don't ask me to say no more.
I got a call this morning saying that the radio station was being raided, so I came on down here with a camera, and first I saw...
Can we see the warrant yet, or what? What's the deal with that? You guys not going to show us the warrant?
An editorial from the Pacifica National Board.
Well, let's bring it out.
The Pacifica National Board notes that the Federal Communications Commission has in recent months renewed efforts to close down unlicensed micropower broadcasts.
Need to show us a warrant.
These efforts included raids in the fall of last year, 2004, on KFAR, First Amendment Radio in Knoxville, Tennessee, and FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California. But the existence of pirate stations is a symptom of a larger problem, and heavy-handed responses from federal agents is not the solution.
Talk to your supervisor. Are you the supervisor?
In a world where just one corporation can own 1,200 FM stations, the FCC should find a way to allow commendable community groups to operate and serve their local communities with legitimate licenses.
Hey, ma'am, can we see the warrant?
The FCC and Congress should be doing more to expand community radio. The raids on pirate stations is ultimately a failure of the system for fair allocation of the airwaves to the public.
Hey, public servant, we want to see a warrant.
Pacifica Radio supports the expansion of the airwaves for democratic communication and participation in broadcast media. This has been an editorial from the Pacifica Radio National Board.
Say goodbye to the pirate for a little while at least. The station known as Radio Free Santa Cruz has been shut down by the Federal Communications Commission. The action came in a raid this morning. Wes Sims was there, and he joins us live from downtown Santa Cruz with the story. Wes?
Hi, Rosalinda. Nobody's allowed to operate a radio station without a license.
And that was an editorial from the Pacifica National Board. Read by David Adelson, written by Dan Coughlin, and passed by the board unanimously, I think. And so we're here at KPFT Houston, and we're going to be talking about unlicensed broadcasting in the world. And we have, as our guests, Gerald Sanders, who y'all are familiar with, from Slave Revolt Radio. And we also have Bob and George, from Free Radio Santa Cruz, who you were just hearing from. I was just cleaning up his language, as a matter of fact. So let me step over and put these guys on the air, and we will be taking your phone calls like around 20-25 after. So I hope you all call in if you have any questions about these folks who have pretty much been pretty near the beginning of this movement, this micropower movement, taking back the airwaves by just doing it. So let me put these guys on. Excuse me a second. Oh, man. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
George?
Yep.
Hi, what's going on, guys?
I'm in the middle of eating something right now, but okay. Putting it on hold for your show.
And we have Bob. What's up, Bob? I was just cleaning up your language.
Oh, how's it going?
We're doing okay.
My language? Which language?
Well, I was just doing I was using your actuality from the bust.
Oh, okay.
Behind David's voice there. And had to take some of the language out. That's okay, because I'm good. So
using foul language? Shocking.
We're actually streaming you right now in Santa Cruz on
Free cool.
Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, wow. Okay.
101 FM.
101 FM. Hey, shouting out. All right, that's great. So I accidentally cut off Gerald, so I'll tell you what. Since I'm flying solo tonight, why don't you just kind of... Our listeners are somewhat familiar with your plight, and we've talked about it and done some mixes on it. So why don't you all kind of pick up where it left off and do what you do best, which is like talk on the radio for a couple of minutes, and I'll get Gerald back. Is that cool?
Sure.
Take it away, guys.
Okay.
You want to talk, Bob?
Sure. I mean, I don't know. I could talk about the beginning of Free Radio Santa Cruz, I guess, since he was talking about us. We've been on here 10 years. We'll be this March 2005. Been an unlicensed radio station in Santa Cruz for that long and broadcast in various areas in Santa Cruz and successfully and had a few visits and were rated last September. We're definitely a community radio station here in Santa Cruz and in a big way, and a lot of the people in Santa Cruz support us, in that effort. Although we were rated, as you heard in that mix, we're back on the air, and successfully, correct, George?
Yeah, we were off the air for less than 3 weeks, or a month, about 3 weeks. I don't remember the exact day we went back on the air, but we've been back on the air since October.
We have a website at freakradio.org where we're streaming as well there. And we have a full load of programming, a lot of political programming here in Santa Cruz area.
And we're at 101.1 FM on the FM dial.
That's right.
So we do have quite a few listeners overseas, but our main listenership would be here in Santa Cruz. I would say that we have thousands of listeners here. Maybe not people who listen every single day, but we certainly have that in the thousands. And, basically what we do is offer what the NPR station and the college station cannot offer, which is a lot of independent news and alternative information. We have local news. We have local information shows, like Robert Norse does a program where he talks about civil rights for the poor and interviews homeless people and does a lot of things like go to city council meetings and other meetings and local meetings and record them and talk to council members. And but we also have international and national news. We have Free Speech Radio News every day at 5 o'clock. We have Democracy Now! Twice a day, and Bob started playing that. What was it, 5 years ago or something?
Yeah, well, we could get KPFA. We can't really get KPFA 94.1 here in Santa Cruz. On a cloudy day, you can get it really well, but on sunny days, it's really hard. And actually, people have been trying to get some kind of link here so people could hear Democracy Now!, and we were the ones to actually start playing it, recording it, pirating off of KPFA, and then bringing it down to the station on a cassette and playing it, and then eventually we started playing it. Now we play it twice a day. And I hear there's a lot of stuff going on with the KPFA folks trying to get Democracy Now! On twice a day.
Let me break in.
Hold
on. Hold on. George.
Somebody's there.
Yeah, I just wanted to break in and say that Gerald is with us.
All right.
And I wanted to point out one thing, that there is a connection, actually, between Bob and George, because Bob is actually the guy who distributes Slave Revolt Radio, which is what our listeners are somewhat familiar with here. So it's actually through the actions and love of Skidmark Bob from Free Radio Santa Cruz that makes that available to the world and all the stations that play it. So we thank you for that.
Sure.
And hi, Gerald.
What's up? What's up, this kid, Mark?
There you go.
Hey, how you doing, Gerald?
I'm all right, baby.
How you been?
Well, we struggling, man. We need to... Berkeley Liberation Radio need a fund drive or something, boy. We got to get us some new equipment. I swear it's pitiful. All of those stuff is... Oh, toe down from... Oh, man, it's sad. But we still... broadcasting, doing our thing, man.
Uh-huh.
We haven't been shut down yet again, you know, since December 11th back then.
What was that, 2 years ago, Gerald?
Yes, it was. And the sister I'm talking to is?
George.
Okay, what's happening, George?
Not much. Enjoying being here.
Okay.
We can barely hear Gerald, by the way. I don't know if there's a way to turn him up, but I can barely hear him.
I'll just crack everything. and you're listening to The Usual Suspects from Community. Actually, there's kind of a difference here because Gerald doesn't like pirate radio and Bob loves it. That term. So, I mean, Gerald considers that taking into the language of the oppressor, and Bob runs around with the Jolly Roger on his hat.
No, let me tell you something. You know how screwed up people are, right? Right? I know you guys know this. But actually, see, Santa Cruz is a funny kind of town. They got a different kind of culture there. Remember, that's the first city in America that came out with a city council voted to support Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Mm-hmm. So that's a strange kind of town. But generally speaking, if you're dealing with people that don't know nothing about nothing, and you come at them with the skull and crossbones, oh boy, they're running to get their rifle. All I was saying was that we should try to present ourselves as what we really are, and that is decent, law-abiding folks. We ain't no damn criminals. They the damn criminals, stealing up all the goddamn airspace, you know, paying off people so they can deal with any political opposition, you understand, by corrupting the officials. How could you possibly have... You know, years ago, it was almost, it didn't need to be discussed that you couldn't have a radio station, more than one radio station owned in one signal area by one owner. It made sense. Now, that's just a sign of the ill health of the system we live in. There are no damn rules. They're the damn pirates. So that's what I was trying to say, Scooter. Take it easy on them.
I think people use the term pirate kind of in a fun way, and you know, it's part of their radio persona or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I certainly agree with Gerald that we're definitely not the pirates, and many people have made this argument that, you know, and I'm sure Stephen Dunifer among them, that I've certainly heard him make the argument that basically the airwaves belong to the people.
That's
and
right.
That the way they're being regulated right now is basically a big handover to the corporations, which I'm sure your listeners are well aware of that. And so, in fact, I agree with Gerald that they are the pirates, and what we are doing is reclaiming what belongs to us, rightfully so, and we are not criminals. In fact, what we're doing is, it's righteous, basically, and it's not even just about some ideological thing, though. It's about the day-to-day necessity, like I said earlier. We've got a couple of somewhat okay radio stations in this town. We've got a college station. But their primary focus is educating students on how to broadcast. And so community members are not exactly prioritized. And there's not a whole lot of informational shows. They do have KPFA Evening News, which is good. But that's not, that's like basically it.
I mean, they have a couple of local talk shows and stuff, but we're putting out throughout the day news and information that is just not heard anywhere else in Santa Cruz. The local NPR stations are forced to play mostly NPR. One of our local stations recently picked up Democracy Now!, but it was primarily because of the fact that we'd been playing it here, and people wanted to hear it on their station as well, because they have, you know, 10 or 20,000 watts, and we've only got, you know, 40 or something. So, I mean, we really kind of were the ones who, you know, made that, you know, kind of encouraged that. So anyway, as I was saying, you know, earlier, we just have so much news and information that you're just not going to hear on a college station or an NPR station. I was listening to NPR today, and they were covering this, you know, there's going to be a truce between Israel and Palestine. Every single bit of coverage that I heard was so slanted toward the Israeli perspective that it was almost unbearable to listen to.
NPR is rather famous for that, actually.
And what our station does is present a balance to that. You know, you'll hear a lot of information on our station from a perspective, especially, you know, on my show about that conflict, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, that will present peace advocates, people that are working on both the Israeli and Palestinian side to find a way to resolve the conflict without using violence. You won't hear about that in the mainstream press. You won't hear about it on NPR. And you'll hear from people in Israeli human rights groups that are reporting, you know, on what's happening in the Palestinian territories. You'll hear from, you know, Palestinians that work with human rights groups, whatnot. My point is that we're presenting views that are just, it's just like Pacifica, except that we don't have a license, you know. But we're working really hard to put out an alternative view in this town, and we don't have a KPFA here.
I mean, one of the differences, I listened on Tuesdays as well as on other days, but, I mean, it's obvious that the freedom to express yourself in the radio arts that goes on at Free Radio Santa Cruz is really encouraging to people. Like, because, I mean, Pacifica, I mean, it's cool, but it's a little staid, you know?
I would know what to do if I had to think about a pledge drive tomorrow. You know, I would probably malfunction. But we do have a lot of freedom. I think that's the whole thing, is what about especially micro radio. And yeah, the illegal aspect of it has to be addressed. But, you know, we have to take this. We have to take this air, and we have to get this information out. That's how we feel. There are plenty of other stations that have all sorts of different other ideas. Like, there's one station in Los Angeles. Sue Carpenter did the KBLT station. It was all music all the time. It was not political at all. But then all the people, the community who was involved, all got together, and they started playing music, and they got together, and they had bands. They had all these benefits, and they actually brought all this community awareness. And I noticed the same kind of community awareness that we have in Free Radio Santa Cruz. They were shut down a long time ago. They actually started the remote broadcasting, one of the remote broadcast pirate folks way back in the early 90s. I think she was on for 2 years. She has a book out called 40 Watts from Nowhere, Sue Carpenter. Check it out. It's a really, really good book about pirate radio, and especially that whole scene in L.A.
Yeah, and what she was doing was, you know, mostly music, if not all music.
It was not political at all.
Yeah.
But the whole community got behind them. Like, people were listening all the time, and people, like, came out and came to their benefits, and, like, all these huge stars like Mike Watt from the Minutemen and the Red Hot Chili Peppers came out and did a acoustic jam in their studio, you know, and they had this community support from all these people in L.A., which was, I found amazing just reading that book, and they're not even left or right or anything, and the same kind of community support.
The point being that, you know, these quote-unquote pirate stations that are really micro-power stations, whatever you want to call them, are taking back, you know, the airwaves all over the country, and they're doing what's important to them. She felt like there's a lot of music, independent music and other music, that's not being heard, and that was her focus. That's fine. You know, our focus is more on alternative media. We feel like we don't have a lot of good alternative media in this town, and I'll tell you, when Free Radio was off the air for 3 weeks, it was really depressing not to have that to turn to. It's like a lifeline. And especially during major protests that happened in you know, around the world in different areas like in Genoa or in Quebec or when wherever these major things happen at the Republican National Convention, for example. There, to me, free radio is like a lifeline. I'll listen to NPR, and all I will hear is this official, these interviews with officials and this official perspective, and then I tune to free radio, and I can hear indie media being broadcast. You know, I'll hear what's happening in the street with the 5,000 bike riders, critical mass that happened, you know, how many people just got arrested, what speech is going on over here, what military families are talking over here, what's just news reports all day from the street, from the ground level, and that, you know, commend indie media for that for sure, definitely, but free radio's picking that up and playing it, whereas nobody else here is doing that. And I felt like if I wanted to know what was really going on, I had friends in New York, and if I wanted to know what was really going on, you know, at the march where I knew my friend was or whatever, I tuned into free radio to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not something I could have gotten from any other radio station. And accessibility, you brought this up about how we have the freedom, you know, there's also the freedom of accessibility. This station is so much more accessible. There's nowhere near as many hoops that you have to jump through to get involved at Free Radio Santa Cruz than,
that's,
you know,
exactly,
the local,
let me
other
just
local
see
stations
at this point
here
with you on that, George, because that's a human side to this, you know, micro broadcasting or pirate radio that I have come to really appreciate. I was, this is a true story. I was at the a high school called Berkeley High, right? And they had, the students actually had a little demonstration of some sort, and they were out there doing their little thing, and I saw this cute little group of girls. They had a little band. They must have been about 14, 15 years old at most. And I said, well, you want to come on the radio and do this stuff? And they came on. They, you know, they brought their mom with them, and they came on. And then I went and talked to old Paul and a couple of guys. We said, hey, let's see if these guys will take a slot. This is nice. This is what we want. And they came on. They got, you know, they started doing a little weekly program. And I tell you, it was so cute to watch these kids do their little thing, just naturally, read their little poetry, talk about problems from their little perspective. It was very interesting. And then when the cops came in, you know, it scared them off, man. I can understand how their mom felt, their moms, you know, because it was about five of them working together. And, you know, most parents don't want their kids to put up with the deal with the jackboot. I mean, because when they came strapped, you know. They had about, you know, they came deep, about 15 of them, U.S. Marshals, FCC, and then they had a couple of Oakland PD.
Automatic weapons and stuff?
Yeah, but they didn't push the automatic weapons, but they had the 9mm, you know, handguns.
Where's
they
Tracy?
Had tools to break in. It was the uniform, you know, that like the kind of blue jumpsuit. Like the SWAT team. That's
oh, yeah.
How they was looking.
The yellow letters on the back.
Yeah, yeah. With all of that.
Anyway, Bob's going to clue us in on the great automatic rifle pictures there from the Santa Cruz bus. But before we get to continue the conversation, I want to give out the phone number. And, you know, if you're listening anywhere, give us a call. 713-526-5738. Give us a call if you want to have any questions about unlicensed broadcasting from our friend Gerald Smith, Slave Revolt Radio, and Skidmark Bob, and George from Free Radio Santa Cruz. Once again, that number is 713-526-5738. Please speak loudly and clearly because everybody's on the phone, and I'll just be throwing you on hold and slamming you on the air because I'm working solo. So go ahead.
I'm curious about how the reaction is to Slave Revolt Radio on KPFT.
You know, actually, I get a lot of calls from people just going, what is this? And I said, well, is this Slave Revolt? And they go, man, this is good. Because, I mean, it is its thing, and it's a great show.
Yeah, it's an awesome show.
Yeah, we love it.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed about that show is that, you know, they really keep it moving. You know, they keep the commentary going, and it's not like a lot of shows where there'll be a lot of pauses and kind of thinking, and I don't know. It flows well.
Okay,
what I'm trying to say.
Okay, we got a caller. Y'all ready?
Yep.
Okay, line one, you're on the air.
One?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. All right. There's some very interesting things about this licensing. Okay. Historically, they had the engineer of the station was responsible for the broadcasting license. And when they had, are you there?
Yeah, we listen.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, it sounded so quiet. But when they had a strike in the 60s, NBC was almost shut down and had to be operated by qualified management, and some of whom didn't have licenses, of course. Well, anyway, they changed the law after that the corporation controlled the station, the license. And then in the 80s, you know, Reagan, deregulated in quotes. He deregulated a lot of things. One of them was air traffic controllers were busted as a union, and the deregulation of the FCC was that you don't need a license to talk on the radio anymore. You just need a third. It used to be a first, second, and third class radio telephone license, but the third class license were like broadcasting, operating a transmitter, and so forth by voice, aircraft, and so forth. But after that, your license in an aircraft is your pilot's license to broadcast. And on the radio station, they only have a general and a restricted. So the general can be owned by the corporation, sort of, more or less, and the engineer, who is controlled by the corporation. And the restricted is people who are only allowed to do certain things, not a full-fledged engineer. So the idea is very political. And giving you the license puts you as an officer of the court, as it were. It's like having a lawyer's a bar license. So that now you're beholden to the people that, you know, you got to dance with who brung you. And the problem with it is that they get to make everything commercial. They get to make everything a viable commercial enterprise, so that people that really want. The last thing we want to hear is the truth spoken. What they want to hear is what advertisers want.
Yeah, but what's your point, bro?
That is my point, and that's why you're. That's
no,
why
explain to me in regular English. What you saying? You trying to say we shouldn't get licenses or what?
No. What should happen is that if they do give you a license, you may not want one. But really, what should happen is that if you can transmit, see, there has to be some order about it. Of course, you should have some sort of permit. You should be permitted as free speech citizens to go on the air. It shouldn't just be Coca-Cola that gets to sell you soda pop. It should be, I get to say on the air what I want to. This is why we like Pacifica. It should be that if you can do the engineering and get it on the air, there has to be a channel that's clear, not a clear channel, but a channel that's free and that you don't. And that you don't interfere. But I think the technology right now is allowing us to have enough channels. You can subdivide these channels pretty close.
Hey, dude, actually, everything you're saying is totally correct. But I got some other callers in.
Okay.
We'll see if these guys have any response. But actually, what the callers was referring to was the transference of the broadcasting license from the actual broadcaster. In other words, I no longer have to get a license. The license is held by the station. And he's absolutely correct on that.
Okay, I know he's right about that. The question is, do you need one?
Different story. Any comments before we go on to the next caller?
Well, I don't know if I can comment directly on what that caller was saying, but I'd like to make some comments about licensing, you know, whether or not it's a good idea or even possible for quote-unquote pirates to get licenses.
We can't.
In our situation, we couldn't even apply for a low-power FM license for a number of reasons. One of them being, the main one being, that there is no frequency space available.
All fooled up.
Under current FCC policy.
All fooled up. Sorry.
What's that?
Mm-hmm. All filled up. Sorry. And you make a very good point, because actually when I've talked about y'all's plight on the air before, people have called up and said, hey, man, there's LPFM licenses. There's thousands of them available. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, yeah, but not in Santa Cruz.
Not in most urban areas, because
right.
of the way the way it is written, there's third adjacent channel protection, which means you have to be three stations over from an existing station. When the low power FM first was introduced, it was second adjacent. But because of
heavy lobbying by the NAB,
right,
even though Congress's own studies showed...
And NPR.
Yeah.
Even though Congress's own studies showed, studies that commissioned showed that there was not the interference, the, quote, ocean of interference that the National Association of Broadcasters claimed that these second adjacent stations would create, because of heavy pressure, they caved in, Congress, and they basically gutted low-power FM.
Right. So, in other words, the people that control the airwaves now, which is both public radio, NPR people, and commercial things, they're saying, sorry, all filled up, these people will interfere with us.
So we couldn't apply for a license even if we wanted one.
None available.
The point is, what we're doing now, and what a lot of other micropower stations are doing, is broadcasting at very low wattage, under 100 watts. It's not going to interfere. We're not interfering anyone. And when we were rated, that was not part of the, that had nothing to do with it.
We were rated
simply because we didn't have a license to operate the transmitter. It has nothing to do with interfering. Nothing at all.
Okay, George.
And most of these low-power stations are so small, there's no way they're going to overpower or interfere with a 10,000 or 20,000-watt station.
It might overpower your mind, but not the airways. We got line two coming on the air. Ready?
Ready.
All right. What's up, line two?
Well, howdy, Scooter. This is Scooter, right?
Yes, of course.
You're going to love what I have to say. This is Frisco Jen, Queen of the Oldies, a KPFT programmer.
Okay.
You know me.
Yeah.
I would say that if you want a Pacifica programmer's opinion, of course, being a Pacifica programmer, my opinion is automatically suspect, I suppose. But the basic idea is our country was created on the idea of revolution, which was American patriots said, we are not going to have your tax. We're going to have a Boston Tea Party. We're going to say no to your corporate control. And I would say that what you folks are doing, you pirate radio people, makes you patriots. That's my opinion. I think you are patriots. I think you are living up to the American ideal, and I think that you are true Americans, and I applaud you. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jen.
Well, thank you very much, brother.
Actually, that was a sister. Sister used to be a brother. Line three on the air.
Oh, would that be me?
Hi.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with the last caller. And I'm a big fan of Sliver Roll Radio and what you guys do. With that caveat, though, I just want to make one mild complaint. It seems like y'all are going out of your way to really take pot shots at NPR. And I don't think NPR can be the only source of media that we get, but I don't think that... Pacifica or microtransmitters should be the only source either. I think that all that stuff makes a good range. I think the real problem is Fox and Clear Channel and CNN and MSNBC, stuff like that. I think NPR is definitely not self-sufficient or perfect, but I don't think it's a huge part of the problem either. I think they do give good coverage. They have access to a lot of resources that, unfortunately, microtransmitter stuff can't get, and vice versa. You guys give a lot of great perspectives that NPR doesn't cover.
Let me direct that question to Gerald. Gerald, why do we pick on NPR and the Democratic Party and liberals instead of focusing on lunatics like Bush? I mean, what are we trying to do when we do that?
Well, okay, caller, let me try to answer you this way. We don't mean to pick on NPR per se, but you see, the people who run NPR made some political choices a while back that degraded the concept of public radio. What happened was a political prisoner by the name of Mumia Abdul-Jamal was given a contract to do a series of commentaries on NPR. Well, when the right-wingers, like particularly Dole, I think it was, a Republican in the senator, in the Senate,
right,
got wind of this stuff, they started raising hell, and what they did was they started threatening and attacking NPR. And, well, to make a long story short, it appears to me that the leadership of NPR, the people who run, the executives who run that, the executive members who run that station, capitulated, and basically not only went back on the promise of putting this outstanding militant on the air. But what they then, they went further and they started accepting, well, actually they were accepting it before then, but it really became pronounced that the corporations were able to make, almost have commercials on NPR.
Yeah, I agree with that. Watch, I think the underwriting's out of control.
Right? So you watch, you see, they'll, all of a sudden they'll say, and this is brought to you by Chrysler.
Yeah, yeah.
This
the
is supposed to be public radio, public television. What
can,
the hell
can
is
I weigh
this?
In?
Hey, so, hey, Halliburton
reason,
is in. Halliburton.
We are indeed critical of NPR.
Can
okay?
I weigh
I hope,
in?
I hope I addressed that.
George.
On this NPR thing?
Go ahead, George.
I want to point out that the program that Gerald Sanders was referring to that was supposed to carry Mumia Abu-Jamal's political commentaries, by the way, I'm sure your listeners are aware, he's a political prisoner on death row in
right.
Pennsylvania, and he's been there for 24 years, and many people around the world believe he's totally innocent of the crime he was convicted of, including myself. But anyway, the show that those commentaries were supposed to air on was called All Things Considered.
Yes.
And that's why when those commentaries finally came out in a book, Mumia titled it All Things Censored. The Fraternal Order of Police, who is certainly not unbiased in this, was one of the major pressures on NPR not to air that, along with, as Gerald mentioned, Dole. And I just want to point out that Pacifica, the Pacifica show, Democracy Now!, went ahead and aired those anyway, and I believe was removed from a number of radio stations in that area.
Yeah, in
the
Philadelphia
area.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I want to say about NPR, the reference that Bob made to them earlier, what he was referring to was the fact that that NPR, along with the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, fought very, very, very hard against low-power FM ever being introduced.
Yes.
And that's what Bob is referring to earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes to show, you know, how few voices they want out there. Some of the major underwriters, too, are Merck Pharmaceutical, which was in the top list of the worst corporations recently.
Yeah.
Also,
runs those,
Mobil Oil, as Gerald pointed out, and General Electric, which is a major weapons contractor. But my thing is I live in an area where I have NPR, I have a college station, I have a quote-unquote pirate station, micropower station, and I have the BBC. I'm very lucky. I listen to all those things. Okay? I don't not listen to NPR. I do listen to it, but thankfully I have something to balance it with.
Right.
And it's bad when you don't.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'll go ahead and ring off now. I just wanted to put in that comment, but I
Thank
greatly
you.
Value what you guys do, and I think you all are all definitely radio heroes. I appreciate it.
Thank you, caller. And I did want to weigh in one thing. My question to Gerald was I'll answer it myself, was that I think that, you know, really the fight against micro broadcasting really was spearheaded by NPR. I mean, there's no question about that. The commercial radio broadcasters weren't whining at all. And, you know, NPR really sees y'all as competition.
Well, it's true. We are.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, the funny thing, too, is the whole reason why low-power FM was brought to the table was stations like Free Radio Berkeley and Berkeley Lib and San Francisco and us and Mabana Kantako and all those folks that took to the airwaves. If they didn't, that would not even be a thought.
Line 4, you're on the air. Hello. You're on the air with Gerald Smith, Bob, and George from Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello?
Yeah.
Me?
Question.
I've got a series of questions, actually.
Okay, well, keep it short because we got
I'll
a bunch
short,
of calls.
Okay. And I'll let them answer, and I'll just
speak up, too.
Basically, what I'm after is tech spec for low-powered...
Please speak up. Speak up. Just.
I'm looking for technical specs for low-power transmit. Where can we get specs/equipment?
Go for
where
it, Bob.
Where is AM speed transmission possible? Where are free station spaces listed AM and FM? How much does it cost to get equipment together? Are there places where we can get an LP license today?
I can't hear him.
Okay. I think this is probably one for Bob, or actually Gerald. I mean, the place you got to go for this information is kind of Google Dunifer, but...
I think anybody can answer that.
Go ahead.
Could you repeat the question, because we couldn't really hear the caller.
Caller. They're having a hard time hearing you, so I'll just repeat to them, okay? What he's asking for is, how do you make a transmitter? Where do you get information on how to make a transmitter?
Oh.
let's say,
AM.
Is micro broadcasting limited to FM? And I think. And what was the other question?
Where are free station spaces? How much does it cost?
Okay, where would you have to move to put up a station?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Well, that's a whole bunch of technical stuff. I mean, you could go to what is it, Berkeley? FreeRadioBerkeley.org.
It's just FreeRadio.org.
FreeRadio.org has all the links and stuff to that.
FreeRadio.org is Jennifer's, is the Berkeley lib, right, Gerald?
That's right.
And there's a lot of info there, and I know that Stephen makes equipment and transmitters and such, and sells it
low
cost to people who want to start their own micro power station. In terms of where there's an open space, there's probably an open space where you live. How you determine an open frequency, I can't answer that. But
really after AM.
AM, we don't know much about AM, you know?
No.
We're really not that tech involved.
AM has lots of legs in terms of distance.
This is true.
I couldn't hear him.
Can I supplement that to just say, I think there's something called Prometheus.org.
Right.
That you might also check out. They have a lot of very useful information there.
Okay, I'll go there. Thanks.
Okay, and one more thing that, actually, I do know people who broadcast on AM, unlicensed.
Yeah, so, check out freeradio.org and Prometheus. I don't know if it's just Prometheus.org, but the Prometheus Radio Project is also, they're more into low power, legal, licensed LPFM, whatever. But I know that people can do AM. And I know that AM tends to have a wider range, but I don't know if that would depend on how many watts you were at. I mean, none of us, I don't know, maybe other people could answer that about AM, but...
It's good at night.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could do it on AM. I don't know. Not as many people listen to AM and...
I don't know about that. I mean, the thing is about AM is that music sounds like crap on AM.
Mm-hmm.
But Marty Derlin just added a repeater in Denver. Pick up their station, so
micro power?
No, it's a full power AM station, but that's kind of neither here nor there in that. But
the thing too is there's I think the place in the UK that sells the transmitter stereo, 40 to 100 watts transmitters. I can't for the life of me think of the company, but
Veronica,
I think it is. Yeah, that's right, that's the name.
Okay, we got line number one on the air. You're on the air with Bob and George from Free Radio Santa Cruz and Gerald Smith from Berkeley Liberation Radio.
Well, greetings from a listener out in Santa Cruz, I gotta say. Not only a listener, but in fact a fellow patriot and real American.
All right.
This is Augusto Cesar Sandino Segundo from Free Radio Santa Cruz.
All right.
And I found out through the grapevine that this whole interview was happening, and I decided to be the one to make it happen where we're broadcasting here in Santa Cruz, exactly what
cool.
You people are hearing in Houston, but a little bit behind. We have the wonderful technical difficulties that make it all.
A minute and a half delay.
Yeah, a little delay. But
so what's up, guys?
That's neither here nor there. I just want to call and say hello, basically. And,
you just wanted to hear your voice on the air.
Say again?
I'm just kidding. I said you just wanted to hear your own voice on the air.
Pretty much, yeah. Say hi, Houston. You know.
Just wanted to see if this was actually live.
You should tell us about your show.
Yeah. My show is themed with music and politics. That's the whole theme of it all. And I play a bunch of pretty much socially conscious, politically active hip-hop and spoken word. Various other genres. I try and keep whatever it is I'm playing to have some kind of theme.
Interviews. You try to have your music help tell your story.
Exactly.
I think
if I was a billionaire, one of the things I'd do would be pay to have my own personal DJ to just play, the songs of my life whenever I need them. You know, every hero needs a soundtrack.
Yeah, it would probably be an undocumented person though.
Because
that's all you could afford.
This is an iPod nowadays. It's called the Global Local.
Sandino's also interviewed Utah Phillips. He recently interviewed Ozo Motley.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Studio Live.
Oh.
Yeah, I brought those guys down.
He's for real.
Really cool band, really cool band. So I just try and play, artists like Ozo Motley and Utah that
and
bring a very positive message.
Historical
in these times
stuff, right, too. You've done some history on your show, haven't you?
Say again?
You did some you've done some history on your show too.
History,
yes. I heard a program where you were talking about the life of the person that I believe that you've taken on your radio
Augusto
name.
Cesar Sandino, yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the things I use my show, I guess, as well, is to raise awareness about, you know, Latin America and U.S. relations with other countries. You know, my particular namesake comes from Nicaragua, tiny little country of, you know, 5-6 million now, I believe, the size of Ohio, that Ronald Reagan saw as one of the greatest threats in the Western Hemisphere in the height of the Cold War.
Hey, we're in Texas, and we were scared to death.
You know, it was only a 2 days march to Midland, Texas, from the Nicaraguan border. Those armed Sandinista gangs, terrorists, communist drug-dealing, you know, whores were ready to storm to Texas and take over, eat your children.
The drug dealers were on the side. Hey, we got we got a full bank, so can I let you go?
I think so.
Okay,
think,
hey, yeah. Hey, thank you. But, your voice sounds great, by the way.
Well, it's just, I think this is what I do because I really enjoy it, and it's one of the most important struggles, I think, that people can participate in right now. It's the battle for people's minds, you know. I believe in the right to self-defense, but I don't think we'll ever overthrow this whole crazy, mad military madness, industrial complex, you know, with they're playing their own games. We gotta trick them, and one of the things we gotta trick them with is education, and that's what alternative media does, and it gives me so much pride and hope and, you know, my future and my people here in this community and globally, to know that people like you and everyone are out there doing their thing. And
hey,
I'm just happy to be doing it, too.
Thank you.
You're here.
The power of the truth. It's an ancient force.
Oh, it feels so good. Anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry. I cut him off a little. Line 10, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. It's Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
How you doing?
Okay.
That's good. I don't know. What gets me is that it seems to me like I have several thoughts about this. I've been kind of thinking about the whole media landscape, if you will, especially on radio. And it seems to me like, you know, more marginal stations like NPR are, you know, they can't afford to lose any, you know, none of these stations can really afford. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see these big stations getting together and, you know, these companies that own like, you know, 1,200 stations or something like that. I think it's the only way they can really sit there and claim to be, you know, and claim and be, I think that's the only way they can really draw in the advertising dollars now. I think that there's so much media out there, you know, there's the stuff on the computer, on the internet, there's, you know, you can get XM satellite radio, you know, there's so many different things out there and all that, and it seems to me like NPR, you know, it seems to me like NPR, not only can they not afford to lose any of their listenership, hardly, but they also cannot afford to lose any of their sponsors and everything. I think they're more susceptible to political manipulation from their sponsors than, you know, I think they're just as susceptible as some commercial.
Yeah, no, you may be right. Actually, that's a very good idea. They may be actually more susceptible to their underwriters than commercial radio is to.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that because a lot of these corporate
Okay, Gerald first.
No, I really think that. I don't have their budget in front of me, so I'm not going to challenge the caller, but I am going to suggest that, from my understanding, a lot of that came because a lot of that, you know, the capitulation came because the Congress pressured them and the Senate pressured them that they were going to cut their budget. Let me see. Let me give you another area in life where this took place. There's something called the Smithsonian Institute, and it is basically a series of museums in Washington.
Yeah, I know.
Very interesting. If you ever go to Washington, try to go to 3 or 4 of them, and you're guaranteed you're going to enjoy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the curators decided to do a history of the atom bomb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem that controversial to me. I mean, as much as it dominates, you know, it's in the back of everybody's mind, you know? Like, boom, boom, bye-bye. And, here again, the Congress, that was the Congress, intervened against the Smithsonian with threats that they would cut their budgets and this and that. If they told people the truth about how the atom bomb came to be, the whole Manhattan Project story and all of that.
I believe
so that was political. Now, I'm not saying that NPR doesn't need the, you know, the money they get from the underwriters. But what if we were in a healthier political situation and NPR got all the money they needed to function, you see, without any corporate underwriting?
Yeah, but you know as well as I do in the current environment.
Yes, of course. But that's the current what? Current political environment.
Well, the current political environment, though, is going to carry over. We're going to have a big hangover from Bush after he leaves, as you and I both know, because we got the huge deficit and all that.
Going already.
Yeah. And all that.
Hey, Jerry. I got to keep rolling because we got a bunch of calls. But
okay, well, I just wanted to throw in one last thing into the mix real fast, and that is, in a world where you have all the satellite stuff, or not all the satellite, all the internet stuff going on, you know, people broadcast over the internet now and do all these other things. I was wondering, you know, where does micro, you know, it seems to me like if I don't want a micro broadcast, I could get on the internet and probably reach the same kind of people I want to reach.
I don't know about that.
I disagree.
Bob, I agree with you, Bob.
I've been webcasting on the internet almost since it first started, you know, since it was possible, back with Live 365. And you really got to work very hard to get 50 or 60 listeners.
And the internet is nowhere near as accessible as radio. Radio is very cheaply, you can get a radio very cheaply. Internet is much more expensive. Not everyone has access.
And people can stumble across a radio station where it's impossible to stumble across a webcast.
Right. And can I just say something real quick about what the last caller had to say?
Go ahead.
I want to point out, you know, a lot of these stations like Clear Channel that own huge amounts of the media, they're coming from a real right-wing perspective to begin with. They're in a totally different position than NPR. They're basically pushing their agenda. And I think they're trying to take over more stations purely out of greed. I don't think it has to do with needing to own, you know, 1,200 radio stations to be viable. I don't think that's true. NPR is getting more and more right wing. I don't know how exactly it's, you know, happening, but I know that the right wing is moving in on NPR. I've heard that, and it's being pushed more and more to the right. And what Gerald said is true, that this all exists within a certain framework that we're trying to change. The fact that, for example, KQED in San Francisco could be pressured by Chevron to not air a 14-part series about using ethanol as gas, and then they pulled that series
and
didn't play it, you know, is proof that whole system is shot, and we need something new.
Okay, yeah, line three on there.
What we do, because we don't have all this commercial pressure. Imagine if every community in the United States had a grassroots station, like the micropower station.
Yeah.
They just sprouted up everywhere, and people had that in their community. And there's no commercials, there's no advertising, there's no pressure from, you know, I mean, we have pressure from the FCC, and that sucks. But if you had thousands or whatever, you know, in every community, that's the ultimate goal.
That's what when that guy talked about the internet and all these things accessible to people. A lot of our listeners don't have the internet. We barely have the internet. You know, I have to listen to the radio and rely on the radio. There's folks that are homeless that listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz, the homeless show, Robert Norris's show on Sundays, and they call in from the streets, you know, and they want to listen to it. And so we're definitely, you know, for the poor and penniless, because that's where we're coming from.
Everybody.
We have a caller on the air, line three.
Yes, how's it going today?
Good.
I tell you something funny. I just listening to what you were saying, and KPFT in Texas, I just happened to flip the station one night, actually in the morning, about 2:30 in the morning, and I ran across it, and I've been hooked ever since. But I did have a question. If I wanted to have my own micro or my own small station, what about just a ballpark figure? What's the smallest amount I could start with as far as money?
What do you say, Bob?
Your
transmitter might cost about $1,000 plus. You need equipment, and you need a place to do it from, so you have to pay some rent.
Okay.
But the most important thing is your human resource. That is engaging your community. Getting people excited about the project, getting people committed to show up every week. and do and make their contribution. That's the most difficult part of that I found in really running, you know, a micro radio station.
That's darn near with everything, too.
Hey, Bob, maybe you could talk about how Free Radio got started. Give him some ideas.
Well, yeah, we kind of started out of the activist movement, the Food Not Bombs, and in Santa Cruz here, and in the early 90s, the whole thing with the San Francisco Food Not Bombs being arrested every weekend, and then they passed all these ordinances, and we wanted our voice, and so we decided to take the airways. We heard about Berkeley, we heard about Dunifer, and we got the folks together that wanted to, that we kind of thought a lot alike, and just put the word out, made some flyers, and then we started talking about it, and then lo and behold, we got a room full of people. Some people stayed, some people didn't, and we ended up putting it on the air.
How'd you get the money?
The money, well, we had an anonymous donor that helped
good.
Us out. It was $1,000 for the whole thing, the Dunifer transmitter, one tape deck, a CD player, antenna.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah,
yeah, but you did have to have a place to do it
for a while. And, you know, the whole thing is keeping it running and being able to pay for it. I noticed that there's going to be a pledge drive starting tomorrow in Pacifica. And that's the worst thing, you know, to hear Flashpoints held up for 15 minutes at the end of the program. Really bothers me a lot. And
hey, dude, these electric bills are a lot higher at these stations.
That's true. I agree.
I will believe it.
And it costs a lot of money to run a radio station.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of money, to, you know, depending on how
I mean,
you want to run it. You
know? The thing is that y'all are in Santa Cruz, and if y'all put out like a big footprint like what we do, you wouldn't pick up all that many listeners because you're basically broadcasting to your community in Santa Cruz.
Right.
We're the diameter of the signal here is like 200 miles.
Okay,
wow.
Yeah. What you're doing costs a lot more money, and you reach a lot more people. It's a different situation.
It's
and
totally different.
Totally understandable
right. Why
you have to do pledge drives. I just wanted to say that, you know, if you were broadcasting out of your own home or out of a shed on the property or something where you didn't have to pay rent, then you'd be stoked because that's the major bite out of our monthly expenditures is rent. So if you could figure out a way to have to pay rent, then it would really be very inexpensive.
If we could figure out a way to pay rent, we wouldn't need to be doing this kind of
well,
broadcasting.
I'm talking to the caller. He asked what it would cost
it
to
solved.
Start a micro power station
well,
and run it. And
let
I'm
me
saying,
add something
Gerald
here.
Gerald mentioned rent, and
go
I'm
go
just
go
saying
go
that's
ahead.
The biggest cost.
I understand.
Let me just add this here. This for you know the last listener, and this is in support of what Bob said, because the truth of the matter is, it is the initial cost to get started is a little more because you have to get your transmitter. And to tell you the truth, Bob, when we started Free Radio Berkeley, the truth is a lot of stuff was given to us. It wasn't always anonymous. People gave us. See, if you're doing the right thing, if you're doing something that people respect, if you're doing something that people want to see happen, they will find a way to help you.
There you go.
And I got all kind of, we got all kind of help.
And
all kind of, when the police came in and took our stuff a couple of years ago, we was feeling down. Do you know, in less than a week, someone gave us a mixer.
Yeah.
And then someone else came in and gave us a CD player.
And
the next thing you know, we had all the, and I know we didn't have any money at that stage.
Hey, Gerald. That's an absolutely perfect note to end it on. I want to thank all you people. We're out of time. Say goodbye.
All right.
Thank you so much.
It's great to hear from you. And congratulations for getting back on the air. And hey, Bob, you used to get busted once a week, and now it's only once in 10 years. So.
Take it easy,
tomorrow.
Big Bob.
All right, man. See y'all later. Hey, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I got a call this morning saying that the radio station was being raided, so I came on down here with a camera, and first I saw...
Can we see the warrant yet, or what's the deal with that? You guys not going to show us the warrant?
An editorial from the Pacifica National Board.
Well, let's bring it out. Can we see
the Pacifica National Board notes that the Federal Communications Commission has in recent months renewed efforts to close down unlicensed micropower broadcasters.
Need to show us a warrant.
These efforts included raids in the fall of last year, 2004, on KFAR, First Amendment Radio in Knoxville, Tennessee, and FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California. But the existence of pirate stations is a symptom of a larger problem, and heavy-handed responses from federal agents is not the solution.
Talk to your supervisor. Are you the supervisor?
In a world where just one corporation can own 1,200 FM stations, the SEC should find a way to allow commendable community groups to operate and serve their local communities with legitimate licenses.
Hey, ma'am, can we see the warrant?
The FCC and Congress should be doing more to expand community radio. The raids on pirate stations is ultimately a failure of the system for fair allocation of the airwaves to the public.
Hey, public servant!